I'm Haley from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, the show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, back from the kind of house-related break that this was going to be on, which turned into a giant pandemic break, and I think we've got something pretty thematically appropriate to look at, or as close as I'm going to get anyway. I've got Billy back from Commander Cast. Billy, how are you?
I'm doing great.
And today, we are looking at maybe one of the most thematically appropriate things we could use coming out of the break here, Ghost in the Shell. Hey, this is Chris jumping in a lot later to let you know that we recorded this before there was any kind of racial craziness going on. So the only craziness was the pandemic. And every time I mention anything about the craziness that's going on, the pandemic stuff is the only thing that I'm talking about, because again, that is the only thing that had happened when we recorded this one. So yeah, that didn't age well at all. Mostly because I can't think of anything else that's like super pandemic disease related that's also a comic that also has a video game. So this is as close as I'm going to be able to get.
I'm sure there's some zombie thing.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to count Walking Dead? I don't know. That exists.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that does technically have a video game.
I don't know, that's so far in the future. I haven't even watched the show. I don't even have HBO.
I don't think it was on HBO. Was it on HBO?
It was on something I don't have. I know that much.
No, that's fair. I didn't have it either.
But let's worry more about things that we are actually talking about today. Ghost in the Shell. This is an anime from 95 that I had heard so many good things about it. My brother had talked about how amazing it was and how much he loved it. My younger brother, mind you, so this isn't, it's kind of a weird backward situation there from what you normally get. And I just, for some reason, had never watched it. And I have no idea why.
Series, this setting. I'm real big into this particular brand of science fiction. Oh, I watched the movie. I watched the second movie, which I don't think is quite as good. The TV series. I did actually manage to track down an issue of the Ghost in the Shell manga as reprinted by Dark Horse Comics in the 90s. I'm a big fan.
For this one, I just watched the anime movie. They had it up on Hoopla. I took advantage of it. I was going to try to read some of it, and then, you know, life kind of happens as it does right now. And I have no excuse for why I never watched it. I was just being a poophead.
Well, I'm glad you've come around. You've got a whole lot more Ghost in the Shell to experience, should you choose to.
Oh, I definitely will, because I'm with you on this brand of science fiction. I mean, I like the stuff that can reasonably happen. I mean, obviously you've got some big giant scientific leaps that would have to happen if this was gonna show up in our world, but I mean, there's nothing inherently this is impossible about most of this.
I agree, and that's part of the fun. Plus, it does my favorite thing with animation, where it uses the fact that in the medium of animation it costs about as much to animate a crazy robot as it does to animate any given person, so they can get away with some effects things that live action attempts don't do so well, even like 25 years later.
So what got you into Ghost in the Shell in the first place?
I saw an ad for it somewhere when the movie first came out, and it looked supremely awesome. And then actually this game we're going to talk about. A buddy of mine had it on one of those old PlayStation 1 demo discs, and we played that demo a lot.
I can't even begin to tell you, like, the first time I heard of Ghost in the Shell. It's just always kind of been something for me that, like, other things that I had watched said was an influence on them, or I heard people talking about, but I can't really pinpoint when all that started. It's just seems to be something that's always kind of been there in the background of my entertainment loves.
Well, it's kind of like Akira for, like, in terms of Japanese animation influence on the United States, you've got basically Akira and Ghost in the Shell and Dragon Ball Z. I mean, Naruto would come later and probably supplant Dragon Ball Z, but that's, they're filling kind of that same niche, whereas Akira and Ghost in the Shell were like the 1-2 punch of, oh, wow, look at what they're doing.
And I think one of the things that people would have a problem with watching Ghost in the Shell now is kind of the same thing people have a problem with when they read Shakespeare, where, like, you've got all this iconic tropey stuff that, I mean, Ghost in the Shell pretty much did first.
Right, right. And, I mean, Ghost in the Shell itself was borrowing a bit from things like Neuromancer and other originators of the cyberpunk genre, but it was one of the big ones to really cross over and become a hit in the United States, even if it was just among the art film scene or whatever. I recall Siskel and Ebert gave it like a very big positive review and were really big on pushing it at the time.
Oh, that's cool. That doesn't seem like something they'd usually be pushing.
Yeah, it was very well regarded.
And then even if you're kind of like me and you just hadn't seen it for a while, you definitely saw the influence it had on other things here. I mean, there is a little movie called The Matrix.
Oh, yeah. The Matrix happened. I mean, there's The Matrix, there's just kind of everything futuristic, cyberpunk. If it's got robot parts, it owes something to Ghost in the Shell at some point along the way.
And it's one thing I really like about this movie, too. I mean, it's not a super overly complicated plot.
No, it's fairly straightforward.
And I really like that it's fairly straightforward like that, because I think it's a pretty good intro to this whole genre, because it's a storyline we're used to seeing. It's not like you've got all kinds of crazy talking animals or weird magical things, and you don't really have to wrap yourself around a lot of cultural differences there. It's just, I mean, it is what it is. There's obviously a few things that, you know, are different in Japanese culture than they are here, and you're going to see that, but it's not like any big old plot points or humor points or anything hinge on understanding what's going on there.
Right. And actually, just to, did you watch the 95 movie?
Yes.
Okay. Because it occurred to me partway through this conversation that Ghost in the Shell is kind of complicated in that each iteration of it is its own independent timeline, its own reboot, its own telling of events that doesn't necessarily have any relation to any of the other iterations of it. Which makes it kind of nice, because you can jump into the TV series without having needed to have seen the movie. You could jump into the other TV series without having needed to see either the movie or the first TV series. But they also did a TV movie for the TV series that I haven't actually seen, but I'm told follows the 95 plot a little bit, but with changes to bring it into the TV series continuity. And I wanted to make sure we were talking about the same movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely. My whole thought process there was the main 95 movie is the only one that was out when the game came out. So, boom. Nice, easy way for me to pick.
Yep, yep. And the game actually shares a voice cast with the 95 movie.
It's so cool that they pulled that off.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw that the Japanese cast had some differences. It was all different. I can't remember which way, but I don't speak Japanese anyway, so I tend to use the English voices on everything.
Yeah, that's fair.
I like to know what people are saying. You know, it's just kind of a little thing in there where I like to know what's going on.
And not everything comes with subtitles you can read while also piloting a mecha tank.
Yeah, that would be insane if I had tried to do that. One thing I didn't do, just because I knew I wouldn't have time to pull it off, was read any of the manga.
So I got one issue, because that was what I could track down. My local version of Hoopla, it varies by library system to library system, didn't have any of the manga, which was a bit of a disappointment, but I did discover that it does have all of the first TV series, so that's a thing I'm going to be watching later. But yeah, I did track down one of the Dark Horse reprints of the comic from the 90s. I'm going to see if I can find a print date. July 1995. Originally printed 1991 in Japan. So this is one of the later series of the manga, because the original run was 89.
I saw that's when it started. I didn't look to see when it ended or anything.
It got like 3 or 4 chunks. Which was basically like 3 or 4 runs of the story of the series. But yeah, the manga itself was pretty good. It was a little different than I was expecting. From someone being mostly used to the TV series. But it's about, the issue I have. There's, some kind of, issue. They're tracking weapons dealers, and it turns out that also Section 1 is on the case, and perhaps maybe in league with these weapons dealers for the bit that we've got. So it's a pretty standard Ghost in the Shell plot. You've got them doing cop things and other departments of the public security being problematic. As that always seems to happen, that everybody but Section 9 is doing something wrong.
I'm going to need to get my hands on this, because I know one year for Christmas I got my brother, it was a hardcover of the manga, and I didn't even, at that point I just knew Ghost in the Shell was a thing that existed, so I didn't even think to look into whether it was actually the movie or went with the movie at all.
Yeah, from what I can tell, like, there's 3 or 4 main runs of the manga, but because the numbering system uses decimals, it's a little bit harder for me to track. And there's been a couple of other spin-off things that have happened and stuff.
I mean, I definitely say if you can get your hands on the anime, you should watch it. It's really good. It's a little more violent than me and Kaylee were expecting, which is fine with me. I mean, she was just glad that she wasn't trying to eat dinner when those scenes popped up.
Oh, yeah. It's mostly robot people, but they're still inside bits get onto the outside. And they still look like people, even if they're robot people.
So if that's the kind of thing that's going to bother you, you know, watch out for that. Maybe get someone to do a pre-screening for you. I mean, I'm sure they would really hate having to watch the movie again.
Yeah, there's also some nudity, so heads up on that. It did get rated R in the U.S.
How did I get it from the library, then?
Libraries have all kinds of R-rated movies.
Well, that tells you how long it's been since I've went to the library.
Yeah, man, you gotta go there more often. Libraries have all kinds of weird stuff, too. Like, they get weird art movies and documentaries and stuff that you'd never even think you'd heard of.
Well, I think I'm going to go check out what's at my local library and you know, see if they're actually open while we drop some promos for a few other shows.
As a new wrestling podcast, we're serving notice to every one of the Wrestling Feud superstars. We don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that's Match Club's list, and we're fixing to start running through all of them. And as far as the feud-ending match is concerned, son, we don't give a damn if it's a Hell in a Cell or a title belt defense. Match Club's time has come, and when we get that shot, you're looking at the next podcast champion. And that's the bottom line, because Match Club said so.
Match Club, a wrestling podcast for fight to feud and back again. Coming soon to a podcatcher near you.
Hey everyone, I'm Danny over here at the Wheel Weaves podcast, where we're diving into the series The Wheel of Time. Are you a super fan? Awesome. Never heard of it? No problem. The Wheel of Time is one of the top-selling fantasy series ever, and it was picked up by Amazon to be the next big TV show. Our podcast is safe for first-time readers because it's made by me, a first-time reader. I'm joined by my co-host Brett, a longtime fan who is acting as my tour guide as we journey into the series for chapter analysis, character breakdown, and probably wrong predictions. Find us at the Wheel Weaves podcast on social media and listen in on your favorite podcasting app.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So, this game, you said, was one of the reasons why you got into Ghost in the Shell in the first place, right?
Yeah, a buddy of mine growing up had this on a demo disc for the PlayStation 1. And I haven't played it recently, but I remember quite enjoying it then. And from what I can tell from watching a couple of gameplay videos, it holds up better than I expected it to. I really expected to, like, load up the video and just have it be that unintelligible PlayStation 1 era blur that happens with some of those games. You just look at it and you go, I can't believe we thought this was good. How did I play this as a child? I can't even see what's happening on the screen. No, this is really clear. And the animated cutscenes, awesome.
Yeah, this came out in 97, which was, as long as I'm not being dumb, is the same year Final Fantasy VII came out, at least over here in America.
Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, you've got the weirdness of 3D and people hadn't really figured out fully how to do it. But the developers Exact had it down exactly, and I would really be mad at myself if I had passed that opportunity up to say that. They didn't really make much. They made the Jumping Flash games and this Ghost in the Shell game, and really that's about it.
Well, that's a shame, because my understanding is, gameplay-wise, this Ghost in the Shell game holds up pretty well. I know it commands a remarkable price used on the secondary market.
I mean, you're running around in a giant spider robot shooting missiles at things.
Yeah.
What is there to not like?
I mean, the giant spider robot could control, like, absolute poop, like, you know, 50% of PlayStation 1 games.
That is true. I know I've seen a few arguments to where, yes, this might have looked better if they had gotten it on PS2 or something, but number one, that argument is always true, so I hate it. And number two, if you'd waited for the PS2, you'd have to wait to figure out how to work with the PS2 infrastructure. And these guys had the PS1 infrastructure down pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. And the interface is clear. You can tell what's going on at basically all times. It's really just a very well-designed game from what I can see of the interface and everything.
Meanwhile, the animated cutscenes were taken care of by Production IG. And basically, if you see a game with anime-style cutscenes, they did it.
Well, and they did the movie, too. That's the same studio who did the movie and the TV series. That's the Ghost in the Shell people.
How do you get better than getting the actual people to do it?
I don't know. This thing is a real gem.
It was also published by THQ, which, again, is somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, at least at that time period. I wouldn't say that the current shambling husk wearing THQ's face has any resemblance of competence, but...
Oh, no, I'm totally with you on that.
Heck yeah.
Back then, though, they had done things like The Mask and Game Boy versions of The Jungle Book and Aladdin. Things like that. And so, I mean, this was a company that at that point still knew what they were doing.
And to my recollection, those were actually pretty good, those ports. This was THQ on the rise.
One of the things I really appreciate about this game, though, is that they came up with a whole new story for it. So you're not just playing through the game. You're playing through, like, a sequel to the game.
I think it's technically a prequel to the movie. I think, given the plot of the movie, and no spoilers, where the movie ends, I don't know that this could come after it.
Yeah, good call. I have sequels on the brain today. But either way, they got the best person possible to make the story for it, Masamune Shiro, who I probably butchered his name, but he was the original manga artist and writer.
And I think you actually pronounced it pretty well, given basic American accents.
Oh, good. I'll roll with that all day long, then.
But yeah, no, this is a brand new Ghost in the Shell story written for the game. You play as the recruit, who is the new guy into Section 9, and you drive around in your giant spider tank, fighting bad guys trying to stop the Human Liberation Front from blowing things up in the name of, I don't know, liberation? They're a fairly generic terrorist group, as far as I can tell. They're the bad guys. They have planted bombs all over various cities, and you have to stop them in your spider tank.
And the only real criticisms I've been able to find of the game really are your weaponry is kind of limited, the level structures are kind of limited, but even when people have said that, it's you're running around in a very well-controlled giant spider tank.
Yeah, it plays pretty dang well. I mean, admittedly, I'm going off of 20-year-old childhood memories, but it plays pretty darn well.
You can run your spider tank up walls, go upside down, and hang on the ceiling. It understood that you're in a 3D world in a console that doesn't really handle that perfectly, so they had a pretty good auto-aim and lock-on mechanic going.
Yeah, I remember really appreciating the auto-aim as a child, and then seeing it again in the gameplay videos I watched, I really appreciated how the auto-aim's targeting reticle would tell you where bad guys were just in case you couldn't see them if they were blending into the background or something. Because I gotta tell you, I don't know if it's because my eyes have gone bad since the PlayStation 1, or if I just forgot how to think like that, but sometimes I have a hard time seeing what is happening.
Oh yeah, some of the stuff definitely blended in there. I mean, the backgrounds are not the most distinctive from everything else that you're supposed to be looking at. Everything is really muted color schemes and stuff. But, I mean, that's kind of a sacrifice to be made in making everything else so good.
Well, and it still looks clear. The visual language of the game works. And then they added those little reticles to just kind of pick up the pieces where it doesn't. And I really appreciate that.
One thing I found kind of interesting is that the PlayStation is the only console this was released on. And I've always just kind of found that interesting because I'm used to people now making games for as many consoles as possible.
Oh, yeah. We got to port it to everything that probably that started off happening much more, I think, in the next generation when it really took off. That PS2 era where everything came out for PlayStation 2, GameCube, Xbox, Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, all PSP maybe. And, you know, the handheld version would be a completely different game from the baseline console version. I think this game actually really succeeds partly because it predates that whole tie-in game flood. It's sort of between eras on that.
And one of the things I saw doing some research here was that making you play as that unnamed recruit was a way to stay away from that tie-in game. Like, this is made for little kids feeling that a lot of other things have had.
I believe that. I remember as a kid being disappointed that we weren't playing as the Major, even if the tank stuff was fun. But looking at it now, it's kind of fun to have the nameless recruit just being there and having the banter going on around you, because, you know, you can't really reply to the characters. They're fictional characters following a script. So having you be sort of the silent protagonist while everybody else does their thing makes it work pretty well in terms of tying into the movie.
I'm really playing through this and watching some videos because I didn't get to play it for nearly as much as I wanted to. It makes me want to go back and watch the movie again and, you know, really pay a lot more attention to it.
The detail is great. Just the detail and the art and the little notes of the setting and everything that's going on in these. It's so good. Heck, the TV show predicted Anonymous a couple of years before 4chan happened.
Well, I was going to go watch the TV show anyway, but now I really have to.
Yeah, well, that first season is... You definitely sit there and you go, when did this come out?
Interesting. Well, I guess looking mostly at the anime movie, but sort of as at Ghost in the Shell as a franchise as a whole, what does this game really get right?
The tone. You've got Bato and Togusa and the Major all bantering back and forth, and the chief being the serious bureaucrat man that he is. You've got all the characters, you've got the tone, you've got the style, which I think are the really sort of key pieces. Because not every Ghost in the Shell story is the big philosophy piece. Philosophy? Words are hard. they're not all the big philosophical piece that the movie is. Sometimes you've got an episode where they're just fighting bad guys in the future with future stuff. That's something that the first TV series Standalone Complex did well, is they had standalone episodes and complex episodes, and the complex episodes were one continuous story that went throughout the whole season, and the standalone episodes were just one-off episodes where they fought the bad guy of the week or, you know, dealt with this week's case. And it would tell you at the start of each episode which one you were getting each week.
Oh, that's just really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that that was a real great story touch. You're just like a nice structural thing. Like, hey, this one, you might want to have watched the previous stuff before you go into it. Just a heads up.
Now, the main thing I noticed was really the whole setting and stuff. I guess that kind of goes along with tone, but everywhere in this game, even though it's not necessarily in the movie, might not necessarily be in the manga, it makes perfect sense to me that it could be. And if they showed up there, I wouldn't even blink an eye at it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looks like Ghost in the Shell. And it feels like it, like driving the spider tank, the Fuchikoma. You're like, you know, rolling around and dodging and jumping and climbing on walls. And I never saw the like spider web grappling hook feature get used in the game, so I don't know if that was in there. But that'd be about the only thing that those can do that you can't do in the game.
And what do you think this game really gets wrong?
I think I would have liked to be able to play as the Major or some of the characters of Section 9. But honestly, I don't know that that's really a flaw so much as a conscious design choice. But I know that later games have let you play as the characters, and there's currently a fairly mediocre first and or third person shooter where you can, picking your character is kind of like, you know, picking a character in Overwatch, except it's the Ghost in the Shell characters. I haven't actually played it. I tried to, but it like asked me to create 3 different accounts, and I was like, no thanks. I already have a Steam account. This is too much work.
Yeah, I can't really think of anything that this game gets wrong. I mean, part of it is because I'm not so engrossed in the entire Ghost in the Shell franchise. But, I mean, the fact that we're saying you don't play as certain characters is our bad thing, is, I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I would point to as a great video game adaptation of a series. I guess I would have liked levels where you're not in the tank, but I think creating another control scheme would have been outside of the scope of the project, so I don't really fault them for that.
I've seen games where they try to do that, and as much fun as that could have been, that also could have been a giant disaster, and I am totally okay with them taking the safe route there and not doing it.
Yeah, one mode or the other always ends up worse, and you end up like, I'm so tired of doing the tank levels so I can get back to being on foot, or vice versa. And you never really want that feeling in a game. That's what Batman Arkham Knight is for.
So let's hold this one to a higher standard. Obviously, if you want somebody to play this game because it's good. But if you have somebody who has never experienced Ghost in the Shell, would you want them to play this, or would you want them to watch or read something first?
Oh, man. Like, I think I'd give them the movie or the TV show, but honestly, I think this is a fine introduction. The characterization is a little bit thin, but I think that's largely just because of the amount of time that they have in this game. They don't have a lot of time to really draw the characters out, but they try. And yeah, no, I this is actually a tough choice, but I think the movie probably wins out by nature of just being the original, but this would be a totally fine introduction to Ghost in the Shell.
I went and watched a compilation of all the cutscenes before we started recording this, and it was under 13 minutes long somewhere.
Yeah, that's not even an episode of the TV show.
I probably wouldn't want to give this to somebody first. Maybe if I knew that they were really into PS1 games or old stuff like that, because I wouldn't want to put a sour taste in their mouth from it just because of that. But anybody who I know like wouldn't get hung up on this as an old game and it's horrible because it's an old game, I don't know, I might give them this first.
Yeah, I think that this is a perfectly reasonable thing if you have it on hand, because it's not cheap to get now. If you have it on hand, this is a perfectly reasonable thing to be like, yeah, try this out. Especially if it's someone who, like you said, wouldn't get hung up on it being an old game. Because I know that there's some games don't age well. And while I think this one did better than a lot, it has still aged.
Yeah, this is no Link to the Past or anything.
No, and I have opinions on why it's tough for the PlayStation 1 era games to age like that, but that's for another podcast.
Well, speaking of other podcasts, if people want to find more from you around the internet, where can they find you?
I write occasionally for CommanderCast.com. I haven't written anything for a while, but life has been kind of a mess even before the plague. But I was just on the second half of their episode 400 talking about Magic cards and specifically an older Magic set from when I first started playing.
We'll definitely throw some links to that down in the show notes, and Kaylee will be scared because she'll think I'm thinking about starting to play again.
You know, you could play on Arena, and it's free.
I might have to break down and do that.
I play on Arena. I was playing on Arena when you told me it was time to record.
Well, thank you for interrupting that to come record this first episode out of the break. And if you want to follow me, more things around the internet, we've got the Facebook group, we've got Twitter. Best way to find links to those is to head on over to playcomics.com. There's links to all the social media things. You can head on over to the merch store where you can buy shirts and stuff with the Play Comics logo on it, and you know, kind of get something for helping support me and keep this show on the air and ad free. Or we do have a Patreon where you can just give me some of your money and you can get some behind the scenes things as they're actually worth sharing, get some of these bonus episodes early, get some things that will be exclusively for you. And if you want to hear other wonderfully geeky shows, head on over to GunnaGeek.com and check out the whole slate of things there. But mostly, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character.
Woo. Successful episode recording.
Yes.
Sorry, had to cough there a bit, so I muted it to save our listeners.